Coming up on today's show, I try the new fitness craze, Bike Row Ski. They have four locations offering it in Dublin, one in Cork, and more expansion planned for 2020. So could you call that a craze? Well, it seems a lot of people of all differing fitness levels are into it. So I got on the bike, on the rower and on the ski machine in a heated room. And you'll get to find out a little bit more about that later on. And I'll be joined in studio by endocrinologist Dr. Donal O'Shea. Donal has long been a voice in the discussion of diabetes and obesity here in Ireland. Type 2 diabetes is on the rise, and this type of diabetes can be attributed to diet and lifestyle. Ireland also has one of the highest rates of obesity in Europe, and one in four of our children are overweight or obese. Now, I have always stated on this show that I don't want to preach to people about how they should or shouldn't live their lives. And of course, we all have to know the implications that if there are health related issues due to weight gain, that it does put a massive strain on the health service. So this topic really is something that affects everyone in some way. But it is a very tricky subject, I think, because it's starting to encompass how you live your life, what you eat, your lifestyle choices, what you feed your kids, all massive red alert areas. But Dr. Donal O'Shea is someone I have always valued talking on the topic, of which he is an expert in. He's knowledgeable. I find him very metered in what he says. He works at St. Vincent's Hospital, St. Columb's Kill Hospital. He lectures in UCD and the Royal College of Surgeons, and he has been involved with public health assessment and some major policy change, including the introduction of the sugar tax in Ireland and the inclusion of calories on menus. So he's joining me today to talk about a new safe food campaign, which is urging parents to be heroes and say no to the onslaught of treats that come with the festive period. Now, I'm fascinated by his work, and as a parent, I, of course, have lots of questions, especially about advent calendars with chocolate behind them for the start of the day. But I want to give you a chance for your questions along with my own. So please feel free to text them in. Anything in the area of weight management, weight gain, the sugar tax, kids and treats, how you handle it, how you don't handle it, 53106 at a cost of 30 cent, or you can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. So what kind of health and wellness week did I have? Well, it was a good one. As well as the onslaught of Christmas, which I am trying not to feel overwhelmed with, I still am. But last weekend, I was in Dingle for the Other Voices Festival. And there really is just something about Dingle. It's a really, really special place. The views all around it, the real community feel that it has, because everything is really on that main street or just off it. The people, the food. I think it's a health and wellness must. And to go to the Other Voices Festival is a great way to see it, because it's so easy to get around and see and not feel under pressure. Sometimes I find trekking through the fields at a festival, trying to see one gig and trying to meet this person, it's all very self-contained. It's all very easy. Now, I did have a group of friends who were at it, and they had rented a car. So they'd kind of head off and do the Sleighhead drive every day, dip in the sea in the morning. I didn't quite get to those elevated levels, but I will say the hot tub outside the Dingle Skellig Hotel, looking over the bay and the mountains with my lovely mother-in-law back at home manning the ship with my two kids. It doesn't get more health and wellness than that, really, does it? So as I said, readjusting back to a week in Dublin of full-on Christmas nights out, shopping lists, getting costumes for kids' plays, it has been fairly full-on. But I, as I say, keep reminding myself not to get overwhelmed. This is the most wonderful time of the year, and isn't it great to have people to buy presents for and places to go? And that said, Friday night was the Communicore Christmas party, which meant News Talk was there and all my ghosts of radio stations past, all my pals that I've worked with over the years. And the organisers of the night, or two of them, were Annette and Joanne, who both say that they listen to the show. So good morning, ladies, if you're listening now. And again, the subject of meditation raised its head. Even on my way into my Christmas party, I'm talking about it. And Joanne is our HR manager, and she says she is an advocate, and it's just setting your alarm 10 minutes before the kids get up and just getting on with it. And I listened this week to a podcast I love, The Last of Your Life, with Dearan Garrahy. And she had Dermot Whelan on. And as if he didn't state the case well enough when he was here on the show himself, I just think he very succinctly, again, on this podcast, talks about how simple it can be and how effective it can be and the science behind the benefits. So once again pottering around my kitchen last night listening to the podcast, I found myself saying, that's it. Meditation is happening this week. So I will keep you posted on that one. You can text the show 53106 at a cost of 30 cents or email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. But as I said, Dr. Donal O'Shea joins me in studio. Good morning, Donal.
Good morning.
Are you a meditator?
About maybe 6 years ago, I started taking a half an hour most days in the week before work to just stop and sit. Sometimes just by the daughter, if I'm cycling to work, there's a little place you can sit down, and I'm sure people think I'm mad, but if you just sit, open your eyes and listen and do nothing, it's amazing. It actually does transform over time how you behave, how you think, things bother you less. And sometimes I'll pull in the car coming off the M50 down to Loughlinstown. You can look out over the East Coast and the sun is coming up, and you can sit in the car for 15 minutes, no noise, and then just continue on your way. And it does change your life. And you have to do it to realise it, because I was a doubter.
Yeah, because, you know, I read the list of places that you work and things you do, and your caseload is huge, and you also work, as I said, with the HSE. So you have a lot going on, not to mention your own family life and trying to get your own fitness and your own hobbies and friends and whatever else in. So it is a lot. And we don't tend to sit and do nothing, especially now we have the phone. So you sit on that bench beside the daughter, and, you know, the temptation is there to check your social media, to check your emails, and not just sit and be for a minute.
Oh, yeah, no, but I mean, you can't emphasize it enough. And people who don't do it would say, oh, you know, it's because I was a doubter, and said, what difference is that going to make to my day? But it makes a massive difference to your internal pace. So all about you is like hectic, as you point out. But if you take time to just be regularly, then you just realize life is the gift. So, you know, mind it and be aware of that. And if you're, you know, heading at an incredibly hectic pace and mindlessly through your day, you don't get anything out of the day. And one of the core things we've introduced in managing people living with obesity is the introduction of reflection time, mindfulness, mindful approach to food, because a lot of the time people, you know, eat on the go. They're not even aware of what they're taking in, and they certainly aren't aware of the signals that their body is sending them to say you're full. So, you know, a feeling of satiety, if you are taking time and slowing down when you're eating, you will experience that satiety earlier. And even you were talking earlier about Dingle and that sense of community. And it is jaw-droppingly gorgeous down there. But if you stop by the Dodder, or you look out over the East Coast and the sun is rising, it's the same beauty and it's the same sun that you were looking at in Dingle. And there are little pockets of places around the world they call blue zones, where people live longer and healthier. They're outliers. And what defines the blue zones is community feel, you know, open doors in small villages in a town in Italy, where people frequently live to be in their hundreds and well. And it's because they're taking time, there's a sense of community, there's a sense of sharing, there's a kind of that feel. And how you feel is incredibly important to how you live.
Yeah, I mean, it's so interesting. Sometimes it's more about your state of mind on holiday than it is about the place itself. We all have beaches, we all have parks, we all have places we can stop and walk and appreciate.
Yeah.
And it's about looking at that. Let's talk a little bit then about your work. And you mentioned why people are overweight. Is there a simple answer to that? Or is everybody different in genetic makeup, in, you know, their hunger levels, in things that are going on inside them?
Yeah, I mean, I think we're beginning. It's an incredibly exciting area to be involved in, actually. You know, people say, well, how do you kind of keep interested in the area, but the pace of our understanding of how the body regulates weight, how the body controls weight, is, you know, that pace of our understanding is just accelerating. So we now are beginning to understand that there's an adult set point for body weight that you defend incredibly tightly. And that defense is driven by hormones, by hunger, by satiety. And they're all physiological processes. So if you give blood, for example, you can give blood because you know that 8 weeks later, your body will have brought your blood count back up to exactly what it was before you gave the blood. And if that meant your blood count was 14.2, your blood count is back up to 14.2. If yours was 12, it's back up to 12. So we have a set point for our blood count, and your body brings you back up to that. That's why you can give blood. If you simply eat less, move more, and lose 10 pounds, your body will attempt to get you back up to what your set point was.
Wow. And because at what age do you set this?
It's somewhere in your early 20s. So, you know, we reach our peak bone mass at about 28. So bone strength and bone density. So we think it's in and around your 20s. And certainly there's very good evidence that if you get to the age of 18 at a healthy weight and reasonably physically active, that you will defend that and you will hold that pretty well for the majority of people for the rest of your life. And the body has no defense against going up. It's always good to gain weight because you're storing energy for future times of famine. That's the way the body was designed, to store energy. So, you know, you can put weight on, but the body does not like to lose energy and lose weight, which is why it's so important that we have campaigns like the START campaign that will encourage parents to really work at against the tide. You know, the Goliath that is the food and drinks industry is creating an environment that, you know, I think parents are doing a great job because one in four of our children are overweight or obese. But that means three of four are a healthy weight. And really, that's pretty impressive given the environment that we're living in.
And do you identify with what I said in my introduction that it's a really tricky area? I mean, you're in the service of helping people. So, you know, you can only feel good about the work that you're doing, of course. But telling people how to live their lives, you know, questioning their lifestyle choices, telling them how they should be feeding their kids, they're all really sensitive zones to be working in. And it can be hard. And people also feel judged based on how they look.
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest remaining issue in addressing overweight and obesity. It's the stigma that the individuals who are living with overweight and obesity feel, how judged they feel. And if you look at the kind of international medical literature on it, the most judgy people are the medical profession. Doctors, followed by nurses, are judging people who are living with obesity. And that's changing very slowly. It needs to change much more quickly, and it needs to change much more quickly if we're to get people living with overweight and obesity the right access to care, which they still don't have. And if we're to get preventive strategies in that mean parents don't feel judged about their parenting. You know, no parent wants to have a child with living with overweight or obesity.
Or health issues.
Or health issues of any kind.
Happy kids.
You want a healthy, happy kid. And we know that children who are struggling with their weight, they're feeling that. Parents are concerned about bringing it up, but parents need to bring it up because the kid wants help.
Yeah, it is a really tough one. And I mentioned Christmas can be very hard because there's so many social norms. I mean, we're talking a lot. I covered here for Lunchtime Live this week, and we were talking about a more conscious Christmas in relation to crackers and wrapping paper and things that can't be recycled. And now we're sort of turning to food, and we're kind of saying, do you need to have the tub of sweets just open all the time? Do you have to give a selection box? Do you have to have the advent calendar? Do you know I spent £30 ordering cardboard advent calendars online because I couldn't find them in the shops. I couldn't find them anywhere. Every single advent calendar now has a piece of chocolate behind it. And I want my kids to have treats and I try not to be the Grinch in their lives. They wish I gave them more treats. And I find they're quite obsessive about treats because they're prohibited. But it's impossible. They're everywhere. I just didn't think chocolate for breakfast was really kind of a place I wanted to go.
It's hard now. You walk into your local supermarket and the Celebrations, Heroes, Roses tins are piled high. They're half price. They're half price 6 weeks before Christmas. So they used to kind of have a half price sale on the cakes and the puddings and the chocolates after Christmas to sell them off. They now have it 6 weeks before Christmas. People, they know the reason they do that is that people buy more. And if you buy more of those and they're in the house, the high fat, high salt, high sugar, highly processed foods, they are addictive. And if you have a lot of them, much wants more. And the parts of the brain that light up in response to the high fat, high salt, high sugar are the addictive reward centers in your brain. They're the same things that respond to cocaine. They're the same things that respond in a much slower way to the endorphins we release when we exercise. But you get a surge when you eat a combination of fat, salt and sugar. And that's what the food industry are really good at making us feel should be the norm and making us feel that if we're not letting our children have those, that we're in some sense denying them.
Well, I suppose what we keep coming back to is we were fine. Like, I certainly remember my mum's from England, so we used to always go over there for Christmas and the parents would be, and I mean, look, we were fairly safe, but the parents would be in one room, the kids would be in the other, we'd be milling around and there was complete access to chocolate, crisps, sweets, dessert, and we just had fun and that was the end of that. And I don't have any health issues, I don't have any food issues. So it's trying not to implant too much prohibition to make it look even more attractive.
Yeah,
no,
exactly. And if you prohibit or ban, then you encourage kind of seeking behaviour. And back in the 70s and 80s, there was two things that were different. One, the sugar sweetened drinks and the fizzy drinks came in at Christmas and came in at Easter. And really, for lots of houses, that was it. And there was a big box of potato brought in at Christmas and the same at Easter. And in between times, the treat culture was much more intermittent. The marketing was much less. And the methods they have now for marketing through Snapchat, through Facebook, as well as, broadcast media, they can get to kids in 100 different ways now in terms of promoting the products. And that just didn't happen 40 years ago, and default levels of physical activity for children then were much higher in terms of getting to school, activity levels within school, activity levels at the weekends. They've all declined, and that's the other side of the equation. So we're having more and more of the treat behavior, less physical activity, and then if your body is designed or genetically programmed to gain a little bit of weight, you will be gaining a little bit more.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of fight a little bit more. Well, I'd like you to put your questions to Dr. Donal O'Shea. If it's yourself and your weight, a family member, your parent, any questions you have at all on this topic, you can text 53106 at a cost of 30 cent, or you can email aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. We had a good reaction to your talk on meditation, your thoughts on meditation. Hooray, at last, the simplicity of Donal's description. Maybe stop calling it meditation and just say be still for a few minutes. Maybe you could rebrand that. Maybe you could add that to your list of things to do. And another says, I was at the cinema recently and I tried to bring healthy snacks rather than getting the food at the cinema, which will actually save you a fortune as well. The Food Hero ad is played before the movie, which is great, but it is sandwiched between two ads for minerals. It's difficult to avoid the constant bombardment of rubbish food ads. We'll keep those coming. Donal O'Shea is going to stay on. We're going to take a break now, but when we come back, find out how I got when I went bike row skiing. I'm about to be put through my paces by Stephen Wineman. I'm looking at the rower, the ski machine and the bike. And after a weekend in Dingle, it's going to be certainly repentance from my sins. But before we get going, what is it?
So bike row ski came about after, I suppose, the demographic that I kind of found myself in the last 2 years, which is mid to late 30s with two little girls aged 2.5 and 4.5 who are always on the go and always busy. And I'm self-employed and my wife, Kathy, is self-employed with her business as well, a pre and postnatal business called Bump Baby and Me. And the two of us have kind of found ourselves constantly on the go and constantly very, very busy. And unfortunately, as time has gone on, my time for my own training has kind of dropped back. So I was talking to more and more people over time, and they were saying, look, they're stuck for time and they can't commit to this training program and they can't commit to that. And they'd love if they could just drop in here and there and do a good sweat session. And the three machines that we chose, the Concept 2 machines, the bike erg, the rowerg and the ski erg, we added heat to the room to increase core temperature and add to that calorie burn and to the experience, something different and give people a new fitness experience. And we added our light show, and then we have a couple of DJs who are working with us for really good playlist creation. So that all kind of contributed into one fitness experience, which became bike row ski. And after a couple of weeks, we noticed a huge surge in people looking to come in and to train with us.
So we're starting on the rower. Right, let's go.
Okay. So we're starting off nice and smooth, nice and easy. And what we're going to really focus on today is trying to dial in your technique and get it a little bit tighter on the rower, Claire. So as you're coming back in to that catch position at the front, what I want you to do is go arms first. So arms going to lead first back in, and you're going to delay that knee bend until the hands pass by the knees. Excellent. You're going to work on just being that little bit more aggressive in your leg drive now. But as you're going a little more aggressive in your leg drive, I don't want you to rush back in. I want you to be really strong on the way out, pause, and then glide back in. So how does that feel now?
Yeah, you can feel all the muscles working harder when I do what you're telling me to do. And up on the screen it says 63%. Does that mean I'm working at 63% of my effort or my ability?
So at the moment, we're just maintaining a really, really smooth pace. We're not looking to push any kind of high effort. This will be what we would talk about as a sustainable aerobic effort where we can work at this for a long period of time. But what we'll do now is I'll get you to just move up your stroke rate just a little bit higher, and we'll move up towards that 30 or 32 stroke rate. And you're going to see that the heart rate's going to follow now. So you're going to move that little bit at a quicker rate.
I'm feeling it now. But God, there's two more sections to go. So you can still be trying your hardest in this green zone, because that's how I feel.
Right now, I would, if I was to give it an educated guess, I would say that there's a lot more in you there. Like there's a lot more power per stroke. And you'd see that if there's more, there you go. So that little more leg drive and you're producing more power, more powerful strokes. And you'll see that heart rate will climb and respond based upon the amount of power per stroke you're putting in instead of the amount of strokes. And that's what we tend to find with a lot of people coming in into a class first time, or they might have rowed a lot of times, but they might be used to working with lots and lots of high stroke rates, but they might not have been producing a lot of power per stroke. So that's something that we talk about with a lot of people.
God, I'm feeling it.
There we go.
Okay.
Excellent. Well done. Brilliant.
So what temperature does that get up to?
So we would have the studio sitting between 32 and 35 degrees generally. That's a temperature that we have found people can be quite sustainable at and get a really good workout in, as well as that increased calorie burn. But also it just produces that higher level of perspiration.
What do you suggest we move on to next?
Starting on row, we would move to ski then next.
Now,
so Claire skis really, really well. Her catch position is really solid and her finish position is super as well. So we have Claire now working off that nice medium effort rate, bring that heart rate back up to where we want it to be, nice and sustainable, somewhere in between that 75 and 80-85% effort. So 80-85% effort, the same stroke rate, same catch and finish pattern of movement, and you're doing everything pretty much spot on, Claire. It's brilliant.
Okay, so we've done 4 minutes there.
Yeah,
it's usually a 45 minute class. And now to the bike.
So now that you see that your heart rate, you recovered really well moving from the ski erg over to the bike. You went back down to the low 60%, and now we can see that we're moving your heart rate back up into that green 70% effort, and then we're going to move back up towards that yellow 80% effort.
Because I have heard that. Is it a sign of fitness how quickly you can recover? Like, we're all going to get out of breath coming upstairs, but it's how you recover. It's whether you can then carry on at the top of the stairs or whether you need to sit down for 5 minutes. Is that the measure?
Absolutely. That's something that, especially on the transition from bike to row and row to ski and ski to bike, we want to make sure that everybody is recovering well. So it is a really good indicator of cardiovascular health if somebody has, you know, a 30 second or a 60 second or a 2 minute break, that they're showing us that they've gone from, you know, a yellow or a red zone effort, like a high 80 to 90% effort, and then showing us within 2 minutes they can get back down to, you know, recovery quite quickly.
I have my heart rate up on the screen here on my own, but usually this class will be full and everyone else's is up there. So can that be maybe difficult for people to be feeling like they're competing with other people and not just themselves?
The main thing that we always try to get across to people is that they're coming in for that team atmosphere and that team element and that group element, so you get to train alongside everybody. But at the end of the day, everybody is here for their own individual goals, which can be fitness, which can be fat loss, and which can be just coming in for fun and to be a part of a group experience. So yeah, some people can be a little more competitive and some people are not competitive at all, but the data that you get back, we can always give you feedback on that and tell you how to improve upon it.
Okay, yes, I'm in the red zone. 90%. I was determined to do it once. What's that telling us?
So you're definitely pushing a really big pace there. You're definitely turning over really, really well. You're not holding back at all. We're also seeing the accumulated response of the three machines now. So you've moved from row to ski to bike. So it's that easier, it's that little bit easier for you to get a response out of the bike now at this stage, because it's your third erg, it's your third machine. Heart rate's just being able to be elevated that little more aggressively.
Okay, so I've burnt 149 calories. Is that even a piece of toast? What's that?
It's a very good start, and considering that we're only working for short periods of time today on the bike, or, well, they're not short periods of time, but they're not full periods of time. You know, that's what we would kind of look at as about a third of a class today in total. So I'd say you would normally do somewhere between, you know, 400 and 500 calories in a bike or ski session with us, which is a really good effort, a huge effort.
And look, it's a nice thing to focus on, the burning of calories, and it is an indicator of how hard you work, but that's not really the essence of fitness. Mm. It's not about fitting into something or being able to eat something. It's about overall general health and strength.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so many markers that we talk about with people, and yes, losing body fat or losing weight is definitely one of them. It's like you said, it's cardiovascular health and it's living a healthier, sustainable life.
People talk a lot about meditation and mindfulness, mm-hmm. and you really do zone out in this class. I mean, we couldn't have the pounding music now because we're recording, but you completely zone out. All you can think about is you and the machine and the class. I think that's really important for our mental strength.
My wife was in one of my classes last week, and a lady said to her after the class, she said that this is her form of mindfulness, because her phone is left outside and the world is switched off for 45 minutes, and she just comes in and she works hard and she has fun and she listens to the music of it.
So what is the plan then for Bike Row Ski? Would you like to roll it out globally and have the brand known worldwide?
The intention at the start was one, possibly two locations, and we make it as best as we can, a best experience as we can, see how people enjoy it. But it's turned into that now that we've had quite a lot of interest. We have five locations, four in Dublin, one in Cork, and we're looking at the next phase, which is potentially another 3 to 5 locations in 2020 and then beyond. We have had international interest. A lot of people are really keen on our brand and on the message that we're putting out and the concept that we've put together.
Well, I've only done half a class officially for the purposes of recording, but I have sweat, I have burned calories, and I have enjoyed it. So, Stephen Wyman from Bike Row Ski, thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. Thanks for coming in.
Endocrinologist Dr. Donal O'Shea is with me in studio this morning. He's here in relation to Safe Food's New Start campaign. It's a 5-year campaign aiming to look at the way kids, among other things, are given treats. And Christmas is a massive time for that. And we've been asking for your questions for Donal. And I might start with this one because it's right on topic. We stay with my in-laws over Christmas, and there are tins of sweets all over the house. There are candy canes all over the bloody tree, pancakes and Nutella for breakfast, dessert and biscuits left out for the whole week. How can I realistically keep my kids away from it all without offending my mother-in-law and having constant rows with the kids? And that's pretty much the same in most houses, isn't there? Most houses.
It is. And you know, you say it's not about what you do at Christmas, it's what you do 90% of the time that's important. The problem is that Christmas used to be the exception along with Easter and birthday. There were three exceptions. Now it's year round, a level of treating behaviour that has our kids consuming about 5 to 6 times. The research for this START campaign by Safe Food showed it's about 5 to 6 times the amount of treat foods in a week and a month that children are getting. So you do have to cap it, but you don't need to kind of bah humbug Christmas. When you're visiting your mother-in-law, you have to value your relationship with your mother-in-law and see how far you can take it. But get your other half, the son, to have a chat and say, look, we're trying to make an effort around treats with our kids, so can there be less of them this year, and can we get rid of them after Stephen's day from, you know, everywhere and visible and in your face? Because if they're in your face, you will eat them.
Yeah, the grandparents were in the dock, weren't they, in a campaign there a few years ago? Because they're just of a different generation and they love nothing more than to treat their grandkids.
Yeah, absolutely. They love to spoil, and their kind of job is to spoil, but we need them to spoil their grandchildren with time and activities rather than treats. And one of these things, you can't compete with a treat in terms of we'll have less treats and we'll go to the cinema at the end of the month. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
The only way to compete with a treat is to say no. And that's what this campaign is saying. You've got to say no more often. And the child's job is to get the treats. And they'll get enough of them. And if you're saying no, you limit it.
Yeah, pester power. Dr. Donal O'Shea is an expert in the area of diabetes and in obesity and weight loss. And we've had a lot of texts in relation to that. Here's one from Sheila. She says, I can't lose 3 kgs that I want to shed. I'm a healthy weight, 60 kgs. I'm 163 centimetres. I was slim all my life, but a little more now post-menopause. I eat well and I do lots of different types of exercise. Less food for me would be minus 1300 calories. So what do you think there with Sheila?
Yeah, so, I mean, Sheila is, as she says, she's a healthy weight. So her body mass index is 23, which is bang in the middle of normal. It is normal to put on a little bit of weight and to change the distribution of your weight after the menopause. That's, you know, hormones are intrinsically linked to weight. So Sheila should be happy with the weight she is. I think she would need to probably go a bit extreme with her diet, like she says, to lose weight. And when you're a normal weight, the body will not want you to lose weight. So I think Sheila should be happy with her weight and maintain her physical activity levels.
Yeah, I hope that's music to your ear, Sheila. I mean, sometimes it just takes a while. I mean, even after, you know, I don't know if you have children, but after you have a baby, your body changes and it takes a while to not hark back to your old body. But after a while, you kind of get used to it as it is. And once you're healthy and happy and you've got the thumbs up from Dr. Donal O'Shea, I think carry on. I hope that's good news for you. Another says, I am a 49-year-old woman. I'm struggling to lose weight. I'm 5'7". I've been 15 stone for 3 years now. I hate being at this weight. I'm quite fit and walk and swim quite a bit, probably taking 5 to 6 hours exercise a week. I lose weight, then I regain it. It's a vicious cycle. I come from a family of overweight women. Any tips would be gratefully received. That's from Anne. And this is what I was saying to you earlier. You're working in a very sensitive area where people are hating themselves. Somebody else comes with another health issue. There's kind of an empathy thing. There's kind of a start, middle and end to their treatment. This is a whole massive gamut from how they feel inside to the health related issue.
Exactly. And it goes back a little bit to what I was saying about, you know, the set point for body weight and the fact that your body is always trying to get back to that. So the first thing that this person needs to do is understand that her body wants to be that weight and wants to stay that weight. So she loses some, she'll put it back on. So she needs not to be hard on herself. We know that eat less, move more is not the answer here. You need more support than simply eat less, move more. Eat less, move more is good for prevention of weight gain. But when you're actually obese, and this lady has a body mass index of 35, so she's clinically obese, she will need to work on the nutrition side, work on the physical activity side, talk to the GP about treatments for weight, because there are now treatments for weight that we can add in to the changes in lifestyle.
Okay. And is it going to be a tough road, or can it become, when, with the people that you work with, do you see people that that struggle, you know, that really feel like they're living outside of a bubble, that they have to not socialise, work hard at their food, that even though they get to a weight that looks better on paper, that they're not necessarily any happier?
Yeah, no, and that, I think that's a critical point. We have a lot of people who come to us and say, I will be happy when I'm, you know, a healthier weight, a thinner. You won't. You'll be happy when you're happy. And your weight will look after, you know. So a lot of the time we have people who go through our weight management program, improve their functional status. Their weight doesn't change much, but through mindfulness and compassion-focused therapy, they're a lot happier. That's a really good outcome. Being thin and miserable is not a good outcome.
Yeah, it is a really good thing to talk about and think about. Another says, my daughter is 13 and recently we found that she's hiding sweet foods in her room and eating them in secret. My husband and I would be quite health conscious. We wouldn't be majorly strict on ourselves or our children, but we would follow guidelines and try to keep sweet treats for the weekend or special occasions. Now I'm worried we've taken it too far. How do you suggest we tackle the topic with her?
Yeah, I think most 13-year-olds will sneak stuff into the room at some point, and you'll find the wrappers. And it's important not to overreact to that and not make a big thing of it. If that child is struggling with their weight, or if there's any hint that they're seriously binge eating, but I think that's very unlikely. So I wouldn't overreact to sweet wrappers in the room. I think kids' job is to do that now and again.
Okay.
And just stay on that healthy lifestyle that they appear to be having.
Okay, good stuff. This is an interesting one. I have an underweight 10-year-old and an overweight 8-year-old. They both eat similar foods, but the 10-year-old is always busy, whereas the 8-year-old loves relaxing. I'm worried about her as I've struggled with my weight my whole life, being one of the few heavy kids in the 80s. Now I've got myself to a size 14, but any upset in life and the weight goes on. And again, this is really tricky because you feel you're responsible for the body image you put on your kids, for the healthy outlook you put on your kids. And yet we're all just trying to do our best and live our lives. And then you've got two kids that are living in the exact same house, but their bodies are very different.
Yeah. So, I mean, boys and girls will have a different pattern of weight distribution anyway, and a different trajectory of weight during life that will be affected by pregnancies and things like that. If you've got a physically inactive girl who maybe has the mother's genes in the sense of a tendency to put on weight. That is something that you have to be aware of. You have to try and make sure that they are physically active. An eight-year-old, if an eight-year-old is put out into the garden, after a while, a couple of minutes, they'll start running around. They'll start doing things. So just looking at activities you can get them into, you know, either in school or swimming, something that will get them up to that kind of 60 minutes of physical activity every day, because really kids do need that for good health. And no matter what your weight, if you're physically active, most of the health consequences of weight are minimized. So physical activity is really an important part of your health trajectory.
Yeah, and you can find kids that aren't really into sport, but even going for a walk with them, finding if it's dance, if it's, you know, something else, as you say, walking with them or getting on the bikes together as a family.
Yeah, I mean, finding something that will get your kids enjoying being active is critical, actually. And it's a question of doing different things until you find the thing. But don't stop trying.
Yeah, yeah. And you will find ultimately that it will benefit the whole family, and you'll probably enjoy it yourself. We're down to our last 3 minutes, but I want to try and get this in. You'll have to come back, Donal. I have a daughter in her 30s who's in a relationship and has a young child. She's gained weight over the past 5 years and is now seriously obese. She eats packets of biscuits, cakes, crisps and has no exercise. I've talked with her and she says she doesn't need my support. She will address this herself. She now says she just doesn't care how she looks. I've spoken about the health implications, but nothing seems to get through to her. What can I do? A very worried mum. And I think this, what your answer will be very important to all parents, because there have been a couple of questions similar with younger kids, because how do you raise the issue with weight without giving somebody a complex, without offending them, and handle it correctly?
Well, I think I don't care how I look. It indicates very low self-esteem, and that individual does need help. The simplest way to raise weight is to say, is it okay if we discuss your weight today? And if the individual says no, then you say, well, can we come back to it another time? That's if they're adults. It's different for children. For a child, I think, you know, the mother might need, or the father might need to say, look, I want to get fitter and I want to lose a few pounds. Would you help me? Or so get the child to participate with you, helping you get a little bit fitter, and do it as a family, because the only interventions that work with children are whole of family interventions. Sitting down and talking to an 8-year-old about their weight is not the way to approach it.
Because with any kind of addiction, any of the addiction services get the whole family involved, don't they? And they sit the whole family down and find out how did it affect them. And often they have to tell the addicted how it affected them. Is it the same when it comes to food addiction, if you want to call it that?
Food addiction is a thing, but for the majority of people, so at the extreme end of obesity, what you're talking about there is relevant. But for the child that you're concerned about is, you know, a little bit on the overweight side, changing how the family do things is the way to do it. And a kind of a weight awareness. So, you know, every house should have a weighing scales, and every adult should know their weight, and every parent or guardian should be aware of their children's weight. Because when you have a condition, overweight and obesity, that's driving over 200 chronic illnesses in later life, and simple steps in childhood can set you on the right trajectory for life, you've got to take those simple steps.
Yeah, well, I said it was a tricky issue, but by the amount of texts and questions that we got in, it's something that affects so many people. I'm sorry we didn't get to every question that came in. Will you come back?
I most certainly will.
Dr. Donal O'Shea, thank you very much for joining me this morning. My thanks to my producer, John Fardy. My researcher this week was Simon Keane. John O'Donovan stood in this morning, and Peter Malloy was on sound. Have a good Sunday.